Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're talking about the legit way to buy a car. All right, Matt. So today on the show, we're going to talk about how buying a car is like a financial game changer, why we think you should probably buy a used car, and then how to go about doing that. So that's coming up on the show.
Yeah, Joel, that's right. But first, it's been a minute since we've recorded. So let's catch up a little bit. Joel and his wife went on a big trip.
And if you don't follow us on Instagram, you probably didn't know that. But if you do, you probably saw some pictures of me lounging around eating cheese and riding bikes.
And eating your $70 a pound fancy ham.
So I told you about that briefly. It's I got this like really fancy aged ham for this picnic that we had at Versailles, and dude starts slicing it like super thin slices, and after two slices I'm like, yeah, that's plenty. I just kind of really want to taste more than anything. I don't want to spend too much on this crazy expensive ham.
Just a amuse the bouche.
Yeah,
just a little bit, please.
But it was it was such a fun trip. Yeah, Paris was an awesome city. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I would recommend it to anyone. I think you posted on Instagram, but we got there for $463 round trip.
That is an amazing deal, dude.
Always makes it a more fun trip when you get a good deal. So you had a great time hanging out there for a week, enjoying each other and the city.
A little throwback to a previous episode, traveling with purpose on the cheap. How do you feel like you're able to kind of incorporate some of the things we talked about, you know, from that episode into, I guess, obviously you guys were flexible on the dates, right? So that's how you got that sweet deal.
That's right. Yep. So definitely getting the ticket price. And then a couple of the other things we mentioned on that episode, and you can go back and listen to the full thing. There are a lot of tips in there, but the first day we walked so much.
Yeah.
And I think that's so good, like for your jet lag and kind of getting off of that and getting used to the city and getting your whereabouts, getting a feel for the neighborhoods and the layout. And so, yeah, spending that first day just doing a ton of walking and seeing what was around us and where we wanted to go back to, that was super helpful, and it was a lot of fun. So I recommend that. And then the day after that, we took a nice bike ride. So I think, yeah, doing that is such a great way for figuring out the place where you're staying. And it's great for exercise. And that's definitely the best way to spend your first couple of days in a new place.
Yeah, you can't like help but to get over your jet lag if you're like walking or riding several miles, you know, in a brand new city, exposing yourself to all the different elements and smells and all that kind of stuff.
That's right. You got to get the blood flowing.
Yeah.
And really it is. We took the metro a bunch while we were in Paris, and the metro is awesome. The metro system there is fantastic.
Uh-huh.
But still, there was something about walking and biking and even taking the bus some. You see all these things that you want to go back to. And if we just had only ridden the metro the whole time.
Yeah, you only see point A to point B. You don't see all the awesome stuff in between, which
we would have missed out
a ton of what Paris is about, right?
Like, right. Yeah, we would have missed out on a bunch of storefronts that we wanted to walk into and check out and a place for dinner or whatever. So, yeah, we definitely, that's where our splurges came, was for dinners. Mm-hmm. At some really great restaurants there. Despite, I will say, the recommendation of our flight attendant on the way there, he said the food in Paris is terrible. I wouldn't bother. He said, stick to the pizza in Paris, man. That's what they do well.
Dude, he was totally screwing with you.
I think he was serious, man.
No.
I think he was serious. And he'd been going to Paris for like 20 years, and he said he hated the food.
Oh, poor guy. That's
we legit had one pizza while we were there, but that's it because the food was excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it was so good.
That's one of the things. I mean, so Kate and I, you know, we went to Paris, France, I guess, initially for work. But then so we flew in early and made a trip of it. But dude, that's one of the things that we realized a couple days in that we were able to kind of find relief in is the fact that there's hardly any like tourist trap restaurants. Like it's all legitimate food. And so you don't have to. I guess early on, that was kind of earlier on in our marriage too, and we had a tough time like getting paralysis, like looking at the different reviews and being like, well, is this right? Or is this right? I don't know.
Which one's the best?
Yeah, and so we couldn't even go anywhere. But then eventually we realized that like, man, you know what? Every single place we go to in the city is freaking amazing. And after we kind of realized that, we were just like going with it and loving every second.
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess, you know, we could have been there for weeks and weeks and still not run out of awesome dinner joints to go to because and honestly decently inexpensive. You know, we were trying to find that balance of tasty, good reviews, close by, but still kind of inexpensive. And I feel like there were still a lot more we could have chosen from.
Definitely, man. That's awesome. I'm glad you guys, sounds like you had a good time.
It was awesome. Very relaxing, but glad to be back on the mic with you, my friend.
I ain't gonna lie. When you were doing the intro, I was kind of like, oh man, it's been a minute.
Back in the saddle, buddy.
Yeah, the blood's flowing though. I'm feeling good.
Trial by fire. I've got hard questions for you here.
Hey, so actually, I thought of this too. While you guys were gone, one of my tenants had gotten in touch with us and basically were asking if they could get out of their lease early.
Oh.
Yeah, a little landlord question. So I was going to ask you if you've ever dealt with that. I don't want to say deal with it like it's necessarily a bad thing, because after talking about it, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible thing. I wanted to see if you've ever dealt with that.
I've had to deal with that a few times,
yeah.
In fact. And okay. I will say all but one time, it worked out really well. For the most part, it was just little things like, hey, you know, I got a new job in another town. Or like, hey, this house just, you know, it turns out I'd rather live in another location and I did this for 6 months, but I'd really like to get out early if possible. And I feel like every time that the tenant has approached me, either email or phone call or whatever, in a way that was kind and respectful and right. asking, I was more than happy
yeah.
to meet them and
nice.
And oblige, especially because as long as it's happening at a decent time, you know, they're not getting out of like mid-December or something
yeah.
like that. That's a terrible time to try to yeah. re-rent the house. And they, you know, if they've been solid tenants or whatever, and I'm completely happy to
yeah.
to work something out
yeah,
with them.
Yeah, man. I think I agree with you there. And that's the biggest reason why I think we were okay with that. It seems that more folks are looking for a place around Memorial Day, you know, like kind of towards the end of May, beginning of the summer, as opposed to like right smack in the middle of the summer. And so, yeah, again, like you, it's not like they're looking to kind of get out in the middle of the winter when things are dead and everything looks like crap. And
yeah.
And too, you just, I would rather have someone live in there that wants to be there than someone that's just kind of, you know, annoyed that they can't. In their case, they bought a house. You can't line up all the timing and all that kind of stuff. Exactly. Right. And so they've got some overlap there. So I'm, you know, I was thinking it through. I was just like, you know, I'd be more than happy to let them get out soon, you know, without penalty as well.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing. I would do it without penalty. I would have certain stipulations, but no penalty or anything. And I'm sure you'll have no problem renting it out to another time. And I'm sure they'll be completely happy to let you show the house whenever you want.
Yes, exactly. That's what they're saying. They're even saying that they would kind of help with showings and, you know, doing whatever they would need to do to make that as smooth as possible. So.
Yeah. I did have one tenant that, it was like really painful, actually, the parting. And it was a husband and wife, and the wife had gotten a job in another state. Mm-hmm. And the way they approached it was not asking, but trying to find all these like loopholes in the lease or in the state
demanding.
Laws. And really, yeah, making demands that were, I feel like I'm super easy to work with as a landlord and super responsive. Mm-hmm. And when they tackled it from that point of view, we were at odds.
Yeah.
And that made it much harder for me to consider some of their demands. And some of their demands were honestly unreasonable.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't really willing to work with them. If they literally just said, here's what's happening, and use the word please.
Yeah.
it would have been, I would have been like, yeah, sure.
All right, sure. Let's do this.
We'll figure something out. I'm happy to accommodate.
Yeah.
But because they essentially went at it from a point where, and
like,
I mean,
you versus them sort of thing.
Yeah. That was,
sucks.
That was where it killed me. And I mean, they were wrong on all accounts too, from
yeah.
a legal standpoint, but that I didn't care as much about that as just, hey, let's talk about this. Like, two humans that, you know, aren't jerks. And if we get it done, I'm always happy to do that with my
yeah
tenants.
Actually, now that you mentioned this, I think I remember you talking about these folks. This is from like a few years ago, right?
Yeah
okay.
Yeah, not fun.
You don't need to go into details, but less than ideal tenants for you.
Yep. You know, we should talk about this again. I know we've had one real estate investing podcast episode, and let's do another one soon.
Yeah,
but that's really the only bad experience I've had, and it still, even with that was a pain, but man, it's been a great experience.
It ended up being fine, though. Yeah
it worked out.
Cool, man. So let's move on to our beer.
This one's in a growler, our first beer.
Ooh,
out of a
yeah.
growler. And I literally picked this up on the way here.
Which is awesome.
Let's see if it makes a sound when I open it.
Nice.
I wasn't sure about it.
That was awesome.
Oh, by the way, so this, what we're drinking tonight is a whiskey barrel-aged stout from Sweetwater Brewing Company in Atlanta.
Yeah, so they're one of our big local breweries. How long have they been around, dude? Do you know?
Probably like 20 years.
10, 20 years? A while. Oh man, look at that.
I swear I opened it up and it was straight whiskey in my nostrils. It was amazing.
I feel like it's always a great sign when the head is like a dark brown.
Yeah, almost like caramel colored. So real quick, we got to give a shout out. Our neighbor and friend, Quickie, provided this beer for us. That's his nickname, not his God-given birth name from his mother, I don't believe.
He says it all came from a wrestling move, or not a wrestling move, but like some character back when he was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
He wrestled. Do you remember him telling that
story? That's right. Yeah, he was on the wrestling team, and his friends gave him that nickname based on some cartoon or something like that.
Yeah, but Quickie owns Park Bar, which is downtown Atlanta. And he's been he's kind of like a staple in the Atlanta bar scene.
Yeah. So the cool thing about this beer, and you can find variants of this beer at different places, but this particular beer that we're drinking tonight, Matt, you can only find it at his bar. It is this Imperial Stout called Happy Ending.
Nice.
And it's 12.4% and it's barrel aged. And they sell this beer on the shelves, I think, but this particular version, you can't find it because it was aged in this one specific bourbon barrel from Four Roses. And that keg of that beer is only available at Quickie's bar.
Man, so that's crazy. So this specific beer then came from that one singular Four Roses bourbon barrel.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you know what else is awesome? At the end of this episode,
I saw this bottle right here, which is also
our amazing totally friend sweet. Quickie decided to shower us with ridiculous gifts and gave us the bottle of bourbon that came from that barrel too. So that's really cool. We're going to have a sip of that at the end of the episode.
Yeah. So like first Four Roses made this bourbon in that barrel and then they emptied that barrel out, bottled the whiskey, and then they put the beer in that barrel. And now that's what we're drinking here too. Let's have a taste, man.
Dude, that is beastly bourbon goodness.
Oh, that's fantastic. Dark. It's got like a nice, like kind of bitter chocolate. Like a, you know, like the nice chocolate, like when you go to the stores and you buy the expensive chocolate, like you do in France, I guess. Maybe you did that.
Like that, like 96% dark.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Like 97% cacao.
Yeah. That's what that's got. Yeah.
Yeah. It has that like chocolatey bitterness on the end there. And
it's got that good bourbon smoothness to it while also having just like retaining enough of that heat to give it just like a little bit of an edge. This is a great
beer. It's got that boozy bourbon edge to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not into the, you know, the hop, all the hoppy beers that are out there, all the IPAs, if that's not your thing, you want to look at beers like this. Brown ales, you want to look at stouts or porters, beers that have a lot of malt. And those are going to be, you know, those are going to be sweeter and are not going to have that hop presence. And that's what this beer is all about. There's like zero hops in this.
Yeah. So cheers from us to Park Bar, to Quickie, and to Sweetwater for this awesome beer.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. All right, Joel, let's talk about cars.
The legit way to buy a car. First, how you buy a car, it's a financial game changer. When you're coming to a decision to buy a car, it holds it so much power over your finances and over years and years to come. From that decision, you will either reap the financial rewards or pay the financial costs based on that one decision that you make on what car you're going to get. Yeah. And so we really want to talk through it and help you make a wise decision so that you're not throwing your money away on a car that you don't like, don't care for, doesn't mean much to you years down the road. We would prefer you to make a wise decision now and for your money to go to places that are meaningful to you as opposed to throwing them towards like a new car or a fancy ride that doesn't necessarily mean much to you.
Yeah, man. The reason that this is such a big deal is because we're talking about a lot of money. For most Americans, the second largest expense they have next to their housing costs, so you're looking at either your mortgage or your rent, is money that they put towards transportation. And for most folks, that's all the expenses associated with owning a vehicle. Unfortunately, for a lot of folks, that means their car payment as well. And we'll get to that a little bit later on, but a lot of money goes towards our vehicles here in America. And you know, that can make or break you.
Yeah, for most folks, buying used is the way to go. And we're gonna talk about why. But don't accept that you have to get a new car because yours is quote unquote old. You know, old is a relative term. Avoid the temptations that culture presents and advertising shows you at every turn that you need a new car or that these new gadgets or newfangled systems or GPS or backup cameras, that you need all these things on your car. And I think if nice cars are a priority for you, it's okay to intentionally spend in that direction. But many of us just view a car as a way to get from point A to point B. And what we're trying to do is minimize those costs and make sure that our money is going to the places that matter to us.
Yeah, Joel, this is, I mean, a discussion we've had before where we're talking about the why behind why we spend, right? And so for some folks, like you said, like having maybe a nicer vehicle, if that's a priority for folks, then go for it. You know, like if that's what you want to spend your money on, then sure. We, as long as you're actively spending that money, though, what we want to avoid.
And you can afford it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And but what we want to avoid is sort of the mindless default lifestyle where you're just like, oh, it's just time to buy a new car, or this is just what you do, because you don't keep a car once it's passed so many miles, right? Right? I don't know.
Right. That's the way most people, oh, it hit 100,000 on the odometer, time to get rid of it.
Or it's like, oh, it's getting close to 100, better bail now while we're ahead, sort of yeah. thing, when in reality, it's like, well, why?
Yeah, we'll get into a bunch of specifics here, but essentially the nugget of what it comes down to is if you don't want to be poor, if you want to live a rich life, you want to prioritize your money to go to investments that are going to be gaining in value, and a car does just the opposite for you. So that's essentially why we recommend buying used, why it's been so important for, you know, me over the years. I feel like buying inexpensive used cars has actually been one of those financial cornerstones for me in the wealth building process. And if I had chosen to buy a new car or a much nicer used car earlier on, it would have completely derailed some of the things I've been able to do I wouldn't have had the cash on hand to be able to put 20% down on a home or buy a rental property. There are all these things. If I had prioritized cars over making investments on things that are going to actually bring me returns, it would have just been a big hindrance to me in the long run.
You know, you hinted at the depreciation aspect of it. And like, essentially, yeah, like value in vehicles basically does the exact opposite of what you want to see in an investment. Incorrectly, so many people oftentimes say that, like, oh, I'm going to invest in this vehicle as if it's going to go up in value. But like, yeah. No, in reality, it only goes down. That's literally worse than just sitting on that money and doing nothing with it. Not only is it not growing, and not only is it not staying the same over the next 10 years, but it's literally dropping in value. And so that's why the rest of this podcast, essentially, we are going to focus on buying used, because essentially what we want to do is find a way to spend the least amount of money as possible on transportation.
So let's talk about depreciation. Essentially, in the first 4 years of owning a car, your car's worth is cut in half.
Yeah.
And so most people, when they're looking to buy a new car, they're only factoring in, can I afford this payment? And that's a terrible question to ask yourself. Can you afford the depreciation costs to go along with that payment is the greater question. And usually most people are trading out cars every few years as opposed to every 10 years, which is a cycle that we would say is much more appropriate. Mm-hmm. And if you're trading out cars every few years based on payment buying, as opposed to thinking about the depreciation, it's not the car payments that are doing you in necessarily. What it is, it's the depreciation that ultimately is going to sink your finances.
Taking that into account, well, like to me, that what that does is informs me that that's where you need to be looking. That at year five, like that's the age of a vehicle that I need to start looking at. Basically from 5 to 10, I see that as being a huge sweet spot when it comes to looking for a car for us.
I think it depends on where you're at in your life and what your goals are. For me, the first car that I purchased was $1,800. And the last car that I drove for almost 8 years was $3,200. The used car marketplace in the United States of America is so robust that you can find really good cars that can get you from point A to point B for $5,000 or less. And so depending on what your goals are and depending how much you want to jumpstart your savings and create wealth, the cheaper a car that you buy, the less depreciation you're going to suffer, the cheaper insurance costs are going to be. And in some cases, if you buy a car that's well-priced, that's less than $5,000, you can drive it for a few years and essentially turn around and sell it for pretty dang close to what you paid for it. And in my book, that is the ultimate sweet spot in buying a used car. I don't think it works for everybody, especially people with, you know, young kids and that have a need for more space and a little bit nicer of a vehicle. But for me, if you're in your 20s and you're single, this is exactly the route you should be taking, and you should be socking away most of your money in the stock market or investment real estate. You should be strongly considering putting your money towards things that are going to eventually benefit you financially in the long run. And a car is not going to do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah, Joel. So depreciation, that's our first point on why to buy used. You know, that's such a huge factor when it comes to the value of a vehicle, something that a lot of people don't really think about. but that has a huge impact on your financial situation. And you got to take that into account, depreciation. The next thing that we're going to cover are costs. A lot of times people think that there are a lot of costs and expenses associated with repair and maintenance in buying a used vehicle. But in reality, man, that's just not the case.
Yeah. And Consumer Reports stats bear this out. They had a great article last year about how much it costs to repair a 10-year-old car. And 7 out of 10 car brands, it costs less than $600 a year to repair a 10-year-old car of theirs. And some of the brands were even more reliable than that, less than $500 a year in repair costs for Toyotas and Hondas and Hyundais and Kias. And so if you're looking at brands like that, that show the repair costs stay low, even 10 years into ownership, you'll know what you're getting into. And huge repair bills just aren't the scary monster that most people make them out to be.
Yeah, man, I feel like a lot of times the biggest thing with repairs is really just like the fear and like the thought and the mentality of repairs versus it actually happening in practice and in real life. It's just really not that big of a deal. You know, folks think that like, oh man, the car is going to break down. I'm going to have to spend all this time and all this money and getting it repaired.
Need to get a new transmission or whatever. But yeah, when does that actually happen?
It's like, yeah, that might happen if you like never get your transmission fluid changed, you know. But in reality, I mean, it's what, like 200,000 miles or something like that before that's even a consideration.
What it comes down to is maintaining the car well.
Yes.
If you buy a reliable brand and a car that checks out well with a mechanic, your repair costs are likely going to be low as long as you continue to keep up the proper maintenance schedule on that vehicle.
Yeah.
And that's another thing to consider when buying a used car is buying from someone who has the repair records, preferably if you can find someone that a car with one owner, maybe two. When you're buying a used car, you're essentially interviewing the person as much as you are the car and seeing kind of how they treated it, how they taken care of it, how did they drive it. So taking those steps and making sure you know the kind of car that you're getting has huge implications on the repair bills that you'll see down the line too.
I mean, I want to go back to, I mean, so what you said about kind of planning for it, like, I feel like that's what's so key. Folks just don't like to think about that kind of stuff. They just want to like get the car and just start driving it and put gas into it, you know, once it starts getting low. You got to put a little bit of thought into it and take it in to get the oil changed. And like you said, staying on that maintenance schedule is so key. And you want to budget for that as well. You need to know that once every 6 months or a couple times a year, you might need to take it in to get the oil changed and have it looked at and to keep it on the schedule of regular maintenance. But that's just kind of part of being an adult. You know, just like you might go in and get yourself checked up. That's just what you need to do for your car as well.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that looking at that Consumer Reports article, if repair costs on your car are likely to be $500 a year, well, a new car payment is getting close to that every month.
Yeah, a month.
So we're talking about spending that much, you know, once a year on average. Let's say you own the car over 6 years. You might have a $1,500 bill 1 year, but then the next year you might only spend $200 on that car. And so over 6 years, it's likely only going to cost you about $3,000 in repair costs to own that used car. And when you compare that against owning a new car, man, that's a bargain.
Yeah, yeah. So like literally the stat for last year, the average monthly car payment for a new vehicle is $480 a month.
Dang.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like you said, close to $500.
Yeah, Matt. So another thing that a used car saves you money on is insurance costs.
Yeah, man. So obviously with an older vehicle, it's cheaper to insure. There isn't like a magic number per se. And so we're saying how like if you're looking at around year five for a used vehicle, you're going to see a lot of the depreciation having already occurred on a vehicle. With insurance, it's not really like that, I guess. It's obviously the older a vehicle gets, it's cheaper to insure. But really what has the biggest impact on your premiums is changing your coverage, right? And so if you're able to drop collision and if you're able to drop comprehensive, then that has a huge effect on your premiums. Ideally, that's the point that you want to get to, right? You want to be able to get to where you're self-insured to a certain point, like you've got enough of an emergency fund set aside that, you know, you can only just maintain that liability, which is required by the laws.
Yeah. And so with my first car, it was a 1989 Toyota Camry, $1,800 car. And the last used car I had for 7 years was a 2000 Nissan Altima, and it cost me $3,200. And both of those cars, the entire time I had them, I had liability coverage only. Not only were those super cheap cars, super cheap to run, pretty reliable, not many things to go wrong with them. On top of that, the insurance costs were a lot lower because the entire time I had those cars, I didn't have full coverage that cost me a lot more every month.
Right.
And when you're talking about cars in that price range, you can self-insure. And it's totally okay, you know, depending on what phase of life you're in, to have a, you know, $10,000 car, $15,000 used car, if it fits your needs. And so like the last used car that we bought was a 2012 Mazda 5. And that's a car that we think we'll have for 10 years. It's a great car. And that costs, you know, a little bit more. And so we've had full coverage on it for a few years. But I think we're getting close to the point where once it hits that $5,000 value range, and you can kind of check the value of your car at kbb.com. That's a great website to kind of figure out, hey, how much is my car worth? How much should I be paying for a car? Once the value of that car hits that level, that's when I'm okay with being...
Yeah, you feel comfortable kind of at that point?
Yeah, that's when I feel okay being self-insured. And that essentially means, like you said, that I've got enough in the bank where if something were to happen, I were to get in an accident, I'm covered for any damage that I would cause to other cars or to people or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I have to pay then for fixing my own car.
Yeah, your own vehicle, exactly.
But if you can save hundreds and hundreds of dollars a year by cutting your coverage and self-insuring in that way, it's completely worth it.
Yeah. And for example, so we have a, you know, an even newer vehicle. This is like the nicest car we've ever owned, but we've got a 2012 Honda Odyssey. Even though it's 6 years old, it's still worth like a pretty penny, man. And we can't really afford to replace that right now. And so another way for us to get our premiums down every month is to raise our deductible. And so you're not going to see as huge of a change in your monthly premiums as if you were to go with liability only, but you're going to still be able to see a significant change in your monthly rates.
Yeah, so you can probably handle the increased deductible of a few thousand dollars more, but you can't handle replacing that car all on your own.
No, yeah, not right now at least. We need to kind of beef up our emergency fund a little bit more.
So essentially what we want you to consider is to spend less on cars in general, and hopefully you're not driving a ton anyway. Think about this. How often do you use your car? Most cars are sitting idle something like 97% of the time. You drive your car to work and home and, you know, maybe to the grocery store. But for the most part, your car is sitting there. Get out of that mindset of thinking of your car as a status symbol. If it's just sitting there in front of your house and sitting there in the parking lot at your job, the car really is nothing more than a mode of transportation to get you from point A to point B and then back to point A.
Man, isn't that so crazy? It's like so silly that we, like in reality, we use our vehicles so little of the amounts of time that we actually own it. The fact that our vehicles sit idle for like 95% of the time that we own them.
Yeah, I think it is something like 97%. Yeah, it's something crazy. It's like
even
yeah.
higher than 95. It's insane. It just seems like when you think about it like that and to think that like really what we're paying for is the convenience, is to have the ability to just be able to go out there and get in it whenever we want, when that's some expensive convenience, man. Like, yeah. You know, like if you actually think about the amount of money that you have sitting there just dropping in value, that's when I start getting kind of nervous. And I think, man, what are we doing with our money?
And then you think what you could do with that money every month.
Right? Yeah, exactly. The opportunity cost is huge. Our van that we got, $20,000. That is the nicest vehicle we've ever purchased. And there's some days when I think, you know, I'm not sure if if we should have gotten that car. I mean, we paid cash, you know, we didn't finance it. But even still, it's just a lot of money that, like you said,
sitting in your driveway most of the time, yeah. A lot of cash just kind of sitting there in this big hunk of steel.
And I just think of what else I could be doing with that money. And those are the times when I start doubting myself a little bit, but we use it, we like it. So I don't want to spend too much time just like dwelling on that.
Yeah. Can't beat yourself up over that too much.
But yeah, again, going back to what you were saying, like we just want to encourage people to driving less anyway. Between the different alternatives to driving your own vehicle into work, like you've got carpooling, which is something we talked about in a recent episode, between carpooling and public transportation and even biking, right?
Totally. And I read an article today about biking and how people that bike to work are like three times happier or something like that. And so,
yeah, the stress levels just go down like crazy because you're just able to get out and move some and kind of get the endorphins flowing.
Yeah, if you haven't tried it, go back and listen to our first episode. We talk about how much we love biking and why. And it really is a special thing that can get you out of your car, back out into your city, into the place where you live, the town where you live, and experiencing it in a different way while getting your body moving. And also at the same time, getting you out of that hunk of metal that is actually causing your sedentary lifestyle to be even that more sedentary.
Yeah, you like go, drive to work. The whole time you're sitting there in that seat, and then you get to work and you sit there in the cubicle all day, sitting in your seat, and then you get back in your car and you sit in that seat again, drive all the way back home, and then you sit down
at the dinner table.
At the table, like it's like no wonder that.
And
like,
then you sit down and watch 3 hours of Netflix.
I wonder why I'm so unhealthy, Joel.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Man, it's so true. I mean, it's like we joke about it, but like in reality, that's real life for
a lot of people. That's typical life for a lot of people.
It's so crazy. And a lot of times too, when we say, oh, public transit, that's something that people say like, oh, what city do you live in? Because unless you live in like New York or San Francisco, there isn't really a real public transit option. And I, for the most part, probably agree with you. Public transit in this country, you know, it's kind of lame. However, anybody, regardless of if you live in a pretty major city or if you live out in the Midwest, like anybody can buy a bike and you can get on it and you can pedal.
I will say too, though, a friend that I work with commutes from the suburbs into the city, mm-hmm. and it's not like it's the greatest public transportation system ever, but he rides a bus.
Does he? Yeah, he goes for it.
Every day. And the great thing about that, when you ride the bus, he can read a book or get some work done or take a nap. Whatever he wants to do on the bus on his way there. And so it's not only is it saving him money, but he's got space to clear his head mm-hmm. as opposed to that, you know, white knuckle sitting in traffic for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. If he's lucky, yeah. Really.
You against the throngs of other people also trying to get home at the same time.
So even if you live far away, but you have a commute like that, that's the same every day, you know, look into it. Look into carpooling options or a bus system, public transportation options. It doesn't have to be this fancy metro system that connects everything. We have a decent bus system in many towns across the United States. And so look into that maybe and see what options there are. Because anything that can take you out of your car here or there is a win.
Yeah. Including another option too is the try to push for is like telecommuting. More and more employees are, you know, having the option to be able to work from home. Even 1 or 2 days a week, man, is just so much better than just having to go in every single day of the week. So for me, I know if I had like a corporate job or a job just, you know, that just required me to go in, I would be pushing for that like 100% because I just know what it's like to be able to work from home and all the time that I have not behind the wheel driving, like fighting other drivers. And so I don't think I could go back. Anytime I like romanticize like the corporate gig, like 9-to-5 gig where I'm like, oh yeah, you just go in and just clock in and clock out and I have to think about it. I just think, oh man, but those people have to drive to work most of the time.
Yeah. So hopefully we just helped you understand why you should buy a used car. And you should buy a used car that's probably 5 years old at minimum to cut those depreciation costs because that's the biggest cost in car ownership.
Yeah, it's huge.
And you know what? If you're super cheap, you should look towards buying probably a 10-year-old used car because you know what? Those repair costs aren't as ghastly as you think they're going to be. And ultimately, buying a car that old cuts the depreciation costs even more and you're going to lose very little on your car purchase if you go in that direction.
Yeah, man. So we've covered the why. Hopefully we've convinced you to only buy used vehicles. And so let's talk about how. So how do you buy a used vehicle?
And Matt, real quick, before we get into the how, I feel like I have to come clean. I feel like I have to confess.
You're going to be honest?
Yes.
Do it.
I bought a new car one time. I did.
This is going to like discount the entire podcast.
You're I know. Like- but here's, okay, so I will tell you why and why I will never...
I have never purchased a new vehicle. let it be known.
And I'm going to say why I don't think I'll ever do it again and why I still think it could have been the right purchase.
Yeah.
So back in 2014, I bought a Nissan Leaf. And the only reason I considered buying a new car was because of an anomaly. I've never seen it happen for any other reason in the car market where it made so much sense to buy a new car. And there are times that it ebbs and flows and new cars get a little bit cheaper than they normally are or whatever, but this was a complete anomaly because of federal government and state government intervention. And so what happened was buying an electric car, and the federal credit still exists for many electric car purchases.
Right.
But I bought a $27,000 car that essentially cost me half of that because of government incentives. My state had the most robust incentive for purchasing an electric car, and the federal government had a ridiculous one that on top of that to boot. And so the $7,500 federal credit and the $5,000 state credit cut the price of my car essentially in half. And I decided, I knew going into this, that this particular car would work for me for a minimum of 10 years, hopefully longer. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think it made sense to move up to that car.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. You kind of got like that 5 years depreciation where you got it at cost, but, you know, 5 years later, but you got that new vehicle with zero. So when you actually got it, what did it, was it like zero, you know, like 10 miles on the odometer or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that.
What's that like? I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. But honestly, that's the thing too. It wears off so quickly.
Fancy pants.
I mean, after a week and a half, who cares?
Yeah.
It's a used car. I just wanted to let people know real quick that I did buy a new car.
Yeah, that's good.
It was this weird outlier situation that almost never comes along. This government intervention situation. Yeah. If it had been a $27,000 car, I never would have bought it.
Yeah.
It would have been ridiculous.
All right. Well, you feel better?
Yeah, but I got to say, I love used cars. I still love used cars, and there's something really, really fun about buying a used car. And so we're going to talk to you now about how to go about buying a used car and getting the best value for your money.
Yeah, I think the first thing that you need to do when you're looking at picking up a new used vehicle is consider what you actually need. I think that's just like step one. Like so many times people kind of go into it and they think by default, oh, well, I got to have this. Oh, well, you know, or I need to have the tow package, or I need to get the car with four-wheel drive or with a entertainment system, all that kind of stuff built in. When in reality, it's like, do I really need that? Do my kids really need to be watching nonstop movies when they're just going from home to school or, you know, wherever it is that you're going? I think these are the sort of questions that don't get asked enough. And by default, we just kind of get roped into whatever is being sold and whatever sort of culturally is being pushed upon us.
Think about what car category you're looking in too. So let's say you...
What do you mean by that?
Well, so I think if you need a minivan, there are a few different models that are historically reliable that you should consider. For instance, like the Honda Odyssey you own, fantastic vehicle. If you're looking for a subcompact, you know, Toyota Corollas are historically incredibly reliable and a great car.
Across the board, Toyotas are almost always the best value, right? Like great vehicles. They're, you know, they run forever if you take care of them, and they're just inexpensive.
Yeah, to buy and to run.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. If you're looking for an electric car or something like that, buying an older Leaf is really, really cheap now, but it also might not work for your needs for the range that you need. So you might want to look for something that can get you further. But if you have a short commute, a Nissan Leaf can be a great option. We also have a Mazda 5, and I think Mazda 5s are this like perfect in-between car. If you're looking for a station wagon mixed with a minivan, the Mazda 5 is this perfect thing that still gives you good fuel economy while not sacrificing some of those elements of space that you might need in a car if you've got, you know, young children.
Yeah, man, you got the real sliding doors on that thing.
Yeah, I haul a fridge in there, man, if you don't recall. It's a really cool vehicle that can kind of allow for you to be able to transport kids or refrigerators or whatever else you may need to toss in there. I also want to say, don't put all this stock in the fuel economy of the vehicle. I think it's important to consider the kind of gas mileage that your car is getting. I think that's something that at times when I was buying a car, I put too much stock in because I was driving so little that the fuel economy meant very little to my bottom line.
Right.
And so I think it is important to consider how much gas you're using and how much gas costs and thinking about your car based on those terms. But essentially, don't get so hung up on it that you buy a Prius over a Corolla when you could have saved $8,000. And it turns out
more.
Yeah. And it turns out you don't really drive that much, that you're going to pay those fuel costs off over time.
Yeah, man, that's a good thought. I didn't think about that. How much does that actually affect like your bottom line? And,
yeah.
And like you said, in reality, hopefully not that much, because you know what we're trying to encourage you guys to do is to drive less, you know, consider the alternatives, carpooling, biking, riding public transit, and even living just closer to your work in general. These are all things to consider. So yeah, that's a wise word.
Yeah, man. And even if you drive 20,000 miles a year and you're deciding between a Corolla and a Prius, a Corolla probably makes more sense. I think Priuses are great vehicles, but there are computers to go wrong with it. They're just more newfangled gadgets that could potentially have issues. And those Corollas are just this basic standard that
very little can break. Yeah,
yeah, where very little on it can break. And it makes them just such a smart buy.
So the next thing to consider in how to buy a used car is to pay cash. Never, ever finance a vehicle.
Ever.
Ever. Sometimes we're even hesitant to finance homes, right? And these are investments. These are things that are making us money. But when you're talking about actual cars, you know, things that go down in value, that is like the worst way to pay for a vehicle is to finance it. Only pay cash.
And essentially how much money you have to put towards a car should influence kind of that range of car that you're getting. So let's say you've got $5,000 in the bank towards a car. That's your cap. That's how much you can spend.
That's what kind of car you're going to get.
Let's say you've got $15,000 in the bank. You know, that's your cap. And that's how much you should consider spending at max. But taking out a used car loan, I mean, the fact of the matter is you can probably get a decent deal through your credit union. But what it comes down to is you don't finance depreciating assets.
So the next point when it comes to buying a used car is to make sure you have it independently inspected. What that means is somebody else looks at it that is not trying to also sell you the car. It needs to be somebody different.
You can find a certified mechanic online, or maybe you've been going to a mechanic in your neighborhood or close by for years and you trust and respect them. You can pay them money to look over this car that you're interested in buying, and they will give it the run through. They'll give it a test drive. They will give you a green, yellow, or red light and tell you what's wrong with it so that you know what you're getting into ahead of time. I have a great mechanic I've been using for a long time. And sadly, he's like 20 minutes away from where I live. So not super close by, but it's worth driving out there because I trust him so much. And so if I'm buying a car, I will go to him. And because I have been using him so long, he doesn't even charge me. He looks at the car for about 15 minutes, you know, puts it up on the lift, takes it out for a test drive. And he has this uncanny ability to tell me exactly what's going on with the car.
He just knows cars, right?
Yeah. And he says, you know what? Hey, actually the left CV joint needs to be replaced 6 months from now because it's getting to that point. And just like an inspection on a home where you know what to ask for from the seller, the same thing is true of a car that you're purchasing used from an individual seller.
Yeah.
Once I get it inspected, I know the repairs that need to be made, and it kind of helps me in my negotiating process or to know whether I need to scrap this purchase completely.
Yeah, just to cut the deal and run.
Honestly, it's probably going to cost you between $70 and $100 to get this 1 hour inspection at most mechanic shops. And there have been times where I've looked in other parts of town and I didn't want to drive down to see the guy that I normally see. And I've paid that money gladly. And it saved my bacon a time or two when I was buying my Mazda 5, Matt. Yeah. It saved me from buying this really, really crappy one that, you know, I was kind of hesitant about after my own test drive. But I decided to take it to the mechanic just to kind of make sure. And if they had given it a glowing inspection report, I probably would have bought it. But their findings essentially backed up how I felt after test driving it. And I was just so glad that I didn't jump into that purchase. And that inspection from the mechanic just really helped cement what I was feeling about the car. And it helped me make a wise decision as opposed to jumping into something prematurely.
Yeah, it's nice. Kind of gives you that reassurance to know you're making the right decision, hopefully one way or the other.
Yeah, because I'm no expert, and it's really helpful to have the opinion of an expert. And how often do we really buy cars? Hopefully, you know, it's really a couple times a decade at most. And so on a purchase that costs so much and is one of the biggest purchases that we make, it is well worth that $70, $100, and a couple hours of your time to take it to your local mechanic and make sure that you're buying the right car. And it can save you a lot of money and headache in the future too.
Yeah. And just to clarify too, this is done before you purchase the vehicle. This isn't something that you do, you know, like once you get it, you like go and have it checked out. This is something you do when you're buying from an individual that you want to do before you make the purchase. Unless you are buying, say, from like a dealership of sorts. And so I'll speak to that because our van, we purchased from Carvana. And Carvana has like this...
It's like a 7-day money-back guarantee.
Money-back, no matter what. There's a mileage limit. You can't drive like over 400 miles or something ridiculous like that. And so I took that van in at that within that window. And even within that first 30 days, there's still this sort of... I mean, there's a basic warranty that's included as well. But just to be sure, I wanted to get it within that sort of 7-day window. And so I asked around and got an awesome recommendation for a mechanic who specifically works on Acuras and Hondas. And he was able to look at it and said that, you know what, it sounds like your timing belt, essentially, which is a huge thing. It's not like an expensive part, but it's a lot of labor that goes into it. That's like one of those big repairs that happens around 100,000 miles.
It usually ends up being a $600, $800 repair.
Yeah, no, over 1,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, this would have been huge. So because they're able to identify that, I called up Carvana and asked them what their policy was on it. And they got the guy's info and he sent the info over and they paid for it. So that saved me a lot of money. And basically we've got like the, what I sort of feel as a sort of a new vehicle.
Yeah. And so if a individual seller won't allow you to take the car for inspection, you're just going to want to walk away right then and there. That is a non-negotiable part of making this deal. And buying from a company like Carvana that has this all your money back, no questions asked guarantee, that's another great way to go. And that guarantee that they offer provides a lot of confidence. And after hearing Matt's experience with it too, if I was looking for a car, you know, that was a few years old, Carvana would be definitely the first place I would look.
Yeah, man, I had a great experience with Carvana. The only downside with them though, is that they don't have older cars. They didn't really have anything older than 5 years. And so that was kind of I was just like, oh man, I wish I could have get something that was like 5 to 6 years old. Instead, I was looking at some stuff that was like 4 to 5. For all the reasons we've talked about tonight, that was sort of a downside for me. So literally, we purchased the oldest vehicle that they were even selling.
and for me, that's the only reason that I have not purchased a car from Carvana. Their customer service and their guarantee are money. And if you're looking for a newer used car, that's a great place to start is Carvana.com.
Yeah. Some other places to consider, Craigslist. Have you ever purchased a car on Craigslist?
I've pretty much purchased all my cars.
Oh, really?
On Craigslist. Oh, yeah. I think Craigslist is...
it's the best.
If you're looking past that 3 to 4 year window and looking towards those older used cars, Craigslist has a plethora of them, depending on where you live.
It depends on the market. And there's a lot to sort through a lot of times, too. But
and you might need to be willing to drive a little bit further outside of where you live if you don't live in a major metropolitan area. But... man, I have had the best luck with Craigslist. And you can tell a lot by the way a post is written and then by talking to the person that is selling the car and just by the things that they indicate in their post about how many miles are on it and what sort of maintenance they've been performing on the vehicle and how they've cared for it. The places you want to really avoid like the plague are the buy here, pay here lots.
Well, and the biggest reason for that is because they're looking to finance the vehicle for you, right? And so that's like the biggest thing that we're saying is only pay cash. And they're making all their money on financing. Like they might make a little bit on the actual transaction of the vehicle, but they're making all their money through financing.
And honestly, a lot of the cars on those lots are troubled cars, have issues with them. And so I also want to warn people away from buying cars with salvage titles. There are a lot of things you can know about a used car that you're buying by having it inspected by a mechanic, but a car with a salvage title can have such a plethora of issues.
Yeah, you don't know what has happened to it.
It could be a flood car. And maybe it's working properly right now, but the rust is setting in and it is creeping all over the body of the car, the underbelly, and it is completely going to mess with your ride over the next year or two, especially after the recent flooding in Texas and Houston last year with the hurricanes. Be really careful when buying a car with a salvage title. It could just present so many issues in your life.
And also too, once you get that used vehicle, you need to do something with your old vehicle, assuming you didn't total it. The biggest thing that we want to cover that you want to avoid doing is trading it into a dealership.
Yeah, you're not going to get your actual car's value if you're trading it in. Yeah, so we mentioned Craigslist. That's one of the best places to buy a used car, but it's also one of the best places to sell one. There's no middleman, and you can quickly and easily find a fair listing price on a website like KBB.com. And once you find that, take good pictures, write a detailed listing. Selling a car on Craigslist, it really isn't that hard.
All right, Joe, let's get back to this beer, man. I will say, like on the nose, I was expecting it to be kind of heavier and sweeter.
Man, the nose is perfect on this. It's got this like beautiful bourbon sweetness to it.
Kind of pulls you in. It's enticing.
Oh, man. Yeah, I like could not wait to take the first sip. Man, mad props to Sweetwater for their inventiveness in this beautiful barrel-aged stout. Thanks to Quickie and Park Bar for giving it to us to drink. This is absolutely fantastic. Honestly, one of the best stouts I've had in a long time. All right, Matt, time for a recap. The legit way to buy a car. Ultimately, you don't have to get a brand new car because yours is quote-unquote old.
Yeah, Joe, that's right. Why? So why do we buy used vehicles? The number one reason is because of depreciation, man. Literally, the minute you drive it off the lot, you lose 10% of the vehicle's value right there.
In a split second.
Yeah, literally, just for the fact that you own it. if when you invest your money, you see the sort of like the compounding interest and the effects of investing that way, what your money does in a vehicle is the complete opposite.
Yeah. Buying a new car is like compounding interest in the wrong direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't do it. People also really overestimate their repair costs that they're going to pay on a car. And Consumer Reports has this awesome article that we'll link to in the show notes that really summarized well how much a 10-year-old used car costs when it comes to repairs. And it's much cheaper than you would expect. Most car models are going to cost less than $600 a year in repair costs. And that's way less than even just two car payments that you're going to pay on a brand new car. Don't overestimate those car repair cost numbers, because those repair costs just aren't as bad as you think they are.
Yeah, man, I think the biggest reason those numbers get inflated is because they become sort of bigger than they actually are in people's heads. It seems like this intimidating thing when in reality, it's just not a huge deal to go get some repairs done and to just properly maintain your own vehicle.
Yeah, and ultimately, we want you to spend less on your cars in general, because like you said, buying a new car is the reverse of compounding interest. So buying a cheaper used car means that more of your income can go towards investing in real estate or the stock market, your 401k, your IRA, as opposed to going towards this metal box that gets you from point A to point B and sits idle 97% of the time.
That's right, Joel. So that's the why to buy used vehicles. Next, how to buy used vehicles. The number one thing, do not finance a used car. Always pay cash. You do not want to finance depreciating assets.
Yeah, I think if you take one thing away from this podcast, it's that. Do not finance depreciating assets. And financing a used car is doing exactly that. How much money do you have in the bank? Oh, you don't have enough? Well, you need to save up money for a little bit longer than to afford that car that you're aiming for.
Yeah.
But you definitely want to avoid taking out a loan from a bank or credit union in order to finance this asset that is only going down in value.
Yeah. Do not get stuck in that car financing trap. It's sort of like the cycle and it self-perpetuates.
Man, and the easiest way to avoid that trap is to buy an older car with cash. So if you only have a few thousand dollars to spend or less, you either need to take a little more time to save up or just buy one of those super cheap cars. And those 10-year-old cars are actually a sweet spot because they have almost fully depreciated out. You're not losing almost any money every month to depreciation. Ultimately, the car is just serving your needs, getting you from point A to point B, and really not costing you much money while it's doing so.
And the last thing we want to revisit here is to make sure you have your car independently inspected. We do it all the time when it comes to buying a new home. Obviously, new homes cost way more than vehicles. But even still, transportation, that being cars, are our second biggest expense every single month. And so if you're going to be putting that much money towards a vehicle, make sure that you've kind of done a little bit of legwork and taken it to a well-reviewed mechanic who knows what they're doing, who knows what they're looking at, and can sort of give you a green light, red light as to whether or not you should purchase this vehicle before you purchase it.
You're probably only purchasing a couple cars every decade. And so it's really hard to become an expert at this. And that's where the mechanic comes in. They see a dozen used cars every day with different issues. And so if you present the car that you're considering before their eyes, their expert eyes, they can help you make an informed decision as to whether that car is going to be a good car for you over the long run or not. All right, everyone, this has been a fun one. There is a lot to consider when buying a used car, and hopefully we've helped you kind of parse out some of those details so that you can make a more informed and wiser decision. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. It means so much to Matt and I.
Our home on the web is howtomoney.com. We'll have some show notes up there for you with some links and some more info that we talked about on the show today. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.